Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Our interview today is sponsored by a hidden gem in Starkville, Mississippi, Alora Modern Wellness. Founded by healthcare veterans Rich and Lisa Lopez, Alora offers cutting-edge therapies like whole-body cryotherapy, infrared saunas, LED light treatments, and assisted stretching, all designed to relieve pain, reduce stress, and boost recovery. Whether you're an athlete, a busy professional, or simply seeking balance, Alora provides personalized care in a serene setting. Located at 821 C Highway 12 across from Kroger, it's your local destination for modern wellness. Discover more at aloramodernwellness.com. Only a couple of these spring football previews left to do. Texas A&M is up next on the docket. Talking to our good friend David Nuno from Tex Ags Radio. And it appeared everything was falling into place last season for Texas A&M, right up until it didn't. When you look at where this team was last year at the end of the season to where they are today coming out of spring, how much better do you feel about their ability to win those final couple of games and get over the hump that Texas A&M has been trying to get over for what it feels like a decade now?
Well, I think they did get over the hump. Look, they lost to an elite Miami team with elite pass rushers, no doubt about that, a game that was tied with 2 minutes left. And Miami, you know, no one can deny the kind of team that they put together, especially at the end of the season. They're the kind of team that, you know, they played well against really good competition. They had a little lull in the middle of the season. As for A&M, you're not wrong in the fact that they didn't play their two best games at the end of the year. And you can almost go back to the South Carolina game a couple of weeks before the Texas game, where they fell into that 31-3 little hole, a huge hole, I should say. So look, here's the thing. People love to talk about A&M's easy schedule. But this is the same schedule that a year ago, I actually did this exercise on the show today, Brian. You know, people have these preseason projections. Joel Klatt just had his, and he's got LSU, I think, at 8 and A&M at 9. He's got Texas at 7. All these projections. If you look at all of A&M's preseason projections, the teams that they were going to face, everybody on their schedule, it felt like, it was like a top 15 team. Like everybody, Florida was a top 15 team in the preseason. So I'm a big believer, Brian. When you play a team, their ranking matters. What happens afterwards is out of your control, right? So, for instance, LSU did lose a couple games last season early on, but they were still a very good football team when A&M played them. A&M had not won in Baton Rouge since 1994. A&M ended their season. In my opinion, they went to Baton Rouge, ended their season. They went to Notre Dame, who, by the way, had a great defense, an easier schedule, but a great defense. And they scored 41 points on them. And, you know, a defense that had guys on the defensive line and offensive line that we're seeing at the next level. Mm-hmm. So A&M, to me, unfortunately, what happened was a comedy of things, a comedy of errors, if you will. They played their best football through the middle of the year. Mm-hmm. They, like in many years before, did not play their best at the end. Now you can ask, why did you not play your best at the end? Well, some of it is Le'Veon Moss being hurt. They couldn't establish the running game. Right. Reuben Owens was good, but wasn't Le'Veon last season. Mm-hmm. But that's part of it. Right. The other part was the fact that they took on some studs on defense. Dylan Stewart causes havoc for everybody. Mm-hmm. The entire Texas defensive line, right, causes havoc for everybody. And hello, have you seen the Miami front line that A&M played against? So that played a part in A&M's, and I'm not giving excuses, I'm just giving reasons. Look, those teams played better. Texas play. Is it ridiculous to lose on the road in the SEC to a team that you should beat? Well, talent, A&M and Texas were right around the same place. I will give Texas this. They played an excellent football game. They ran the ball effectively against A&M in that second half, and the crowd made a difference. All that can be true. Just like Texas almost lost to Kentucky on the road and should have lost to Mississippi State, as we all know, right? So it was.
I'm sorry. I blacked out for a second there when you said that. I'm so sorry. Well,
that game really hurt me, by the way. So
it hurt you.
Yeah. Well, trust me. To me, like most Aggies, our favorite team is A&M and anybody playing Texas, as you know. You know how that works.
I know how that works.
So I'm giving you a really long answer to tell you that I think the offensive line did not play their best down the stretch. Really good defenses were there. Marcel was a little bit more rushed at the end, and you know why now. He didn't play his best. He needs to connect on better throws. The wind played a factor in the Miami game. It did so for Carson Beck as well. Mm-hmm. So they played better teams down the stretch. They didn't play their best down the stretch, and they've got to be better down their stretch. But this year is going to be even more difficult with that schedule.
So you mentioned Reed there, and you look at A&M at the skill positions. Yes, they did lose Le'Veon Moss, but Owens is back. Jamarian Morrow is back. Those are good running backs. And the freshman Edwards coming in is a highly touted kid. Their receivers are as good as anybody has. Isaiah Horton is a great transfer. Bethel Roman, Mario Craver, obviously Mississippi State, we know what he's capable of. I don't think skill position it can be an excuse for Marcel Reed this year. Does he take that step forward as a passer that A&M's going to have him do if they want to win a national title?
Well, I'll say this to that. Do most quarterbacks who have a year and a half of experience as a starter get better? Typically, yes.
They tend to.
Right?
Yeah.
So I would say that I love Colin Klein as a play caller, but at times I don't think he called their best plays. I think Marcel's touch wasn't great at times last year, and at times it was great. It could be in the same game. It could be in the first half, you're like, what is he doing? And then second half, South Carolina, you're like, dude, this is the best. This is Tecmo Bowl. This is amazing what he's doing, right? So there's a little bit of that. He has to be better. There's no doubt about it. But it doesn't completely fall on him. And where I pause on Marcel is the offensive line. A&M did a great job because they sent four guys to the NFL, right? Like, it's a completely new offensive line. And I'm of the opinion that it takes time to develop an offensive line, even if you have dudes. Look at Texas last year. They had young guys starting, and it took them about seven, eight games, nine games to really become an elite-looking offensive line. What A&M is doing this year, it's different than what Texas did, and maybe similar to LSU, and it backfired on LSU, is A&M went and got guys with SEC experience to compete for jobs with young guys that should be ready to go. So what I worry about is that cohesion, like how much chemistry does that offensive line have, especially in the early part? But if you're talking about a strategy to replace an offensive line, young four and five stars developing, hopefully they're ready. Oh, and also we went and got Wilcomb Formby from Alabama and Tyree Adams from LSU and Cohen Echols from LSU and others, right? And they got Trevon Ball from South Carolina, all with SEC experience. And I think if you are going to send four guys to the league and worry about the next year, A&M did as good as they could from a step back going to buy the groceries. We'll see if those groceries work out. But at least as I sit today, I am fearful of the chemistry, but I'm also optimistic based on what they have that are developing and what they brought in from other SEC programs.
You look at A&M defensively last year. What a weird outlier that they only gave up 40 points in two games and won both of those games. That's a weird stat. This was a pretty good defense last year. Can it be an elite defense this year?
Great question. So a couple of the problems with the defense last year, I'd say there were two major problems. They gave up too many big plays, especially on the run, and it was a problem that plagued them all year long. You would have the Miami game. Okay, Miami had one big offensive play the whole game. It just so happened to happen in the last 2 minutes of the game, and they scored a play later, right? Or two plays later. So against UTSA week one, like Robert Henry Jr., one of the best running backs in football. I'm sorry, go watch that kid play.
He's good.
Busted out a 50, 60-yard run touchdown. Not UTSA, Utah State the next week. Against Arkansas, every play was a big play. A&M against Texas, there was just these big chunk plays. They'd be like, where did that come from, that 30, 40-yard run? Their problem was playing really good defense for two, three downs, and then a terrible play, right? And that was their issue last year. So that they've got to get better at that. And one of the things we've heard for the last year is misfits. Linebackers missing, the defensive backs missing spots. So they've got to get better there. And I'll give Mike Elko this. They are really good at diagnosing a problem and fixing that problem the next year. So that was a huge problem. The other problem is this team, like, they got one interception from their secondary. You've got to force as much as they were able to get in the backfield and affect quarterbacks with Cassius Howell and company. You have got to force more turnovers, especially from your secondary. Now, some of it, I think, was just drop balls, like a fluke drop, like guys that you trust to catch balls. They dropped a couple. But whatever the reason was, those are the two areas I'm concerned. I'll throw in a third reason, and then I'll give you a little reason for optimism. Linebackers. I mean, you lost your captain, Damian Sanford. Now, Billy Lucci has reported he doesn't think it's going to be as long as some people were speculating initially. But regardless, you're one of your team captains, your linebackers gets hurt at the spring game, and now you have some questions there. Those are my questions. Where I'm optimistic, they got some dudes in the secondary. They got some real dudes, right? Ricky Gibson at Tennessee was the truth. Des Ricks, this is entering his third year starting at cornerback for Texas A&M. They brought in guys from the portal to help fill in. Dalton Brooks has been fantastic. Bryce Anderson, like he's going to play back at the nickel where he used to play, where he's had a lot of success. Taufik Byard came in from Colorado. Brandon Arrington's a freshman that could start on some SEC team. So you've got some guys in the secondary. Then the other question will be the defensive line, right? You send all these guys to the pros, to the NFL. How do you replace them? Well, that's what A&M has done the last few years, especially with Coach Elko before he left and after, right? You, Shamar Stewart, Shamar Turner, Nick Scorton leave a year and a half ago, and people were like, oh, how are they going to replace him? Well, we had Cassius Howell waiting in the wings, and Coach Elko felt very good about Cassius Howell. So he feels really good about these guys. He went and got some players that have played Big Ten. He's got some guys coming from the West Coast that have played. And I think they're really excited about what they brought in. And also Marco Jones is now entering his second year. He's developed into a beast. DJ Hicks, who's been waiting his turn to be the everyday interior guy, is looked really good. So they've got guys. They got to prove it. But that's the name of the game in college football, right? Like you think if you recruit at a high level, the guys that have been waiting their turn, this is their time to shine. Texas has to go through it. Georgia's got to go through it. Alabama's got to go through it. And they got to bring in the transfers. And I trust Coach Elko from a defensive standpoint to get it right.
Speaking of defensive linemen, I would be remiss to not ask you what you think Mississippi State's going to get out of Daylon Evans this year.
I think Daylon Evans just needed an opportunity. I really do. I think you guys should be really excited about him. It's just when you're playing behind some of the dudes he's had to play, and look, we live in a different world. Like you want to play now, right? There was a time where waiting was okay, and it takes kind of a special situation to wait. I think Daylon Evans is going to be a really nice addition for you all. I think you'll be excited about what you see.
What was the position battle in the spring that you had the closest eye on?
Think about that position battle in the spring. I have a close eye on. I'm going to give you a couple different answers. This is called a Billy Lucci special, where you just give like nine answers and you make sure you don't forget anything. The linebacker spot, because they brought in Ray Coney. Torian York left for the NFL, so Ray Coney came in the Tulsa transfer. I'm excited about seeing what he's going to be able to do. And the guy can tackle and he can smash out. He can hit, but is he going to take that spot? Is Noah McHale, who's now a sophomore, who had a pick six in the spring game. I'm interested to see how that works out. Jordan Lockhart's been a linebacker that's been waiting his turn. Is he ready to take the big step? I think that's one of them. We try to think. I think we feel very good about wide receiver. I don't think anybody's passing Mario Crave or Isaiah Horton or ABR or Terry Bussey for that. Running back, I feel really good about Reuben and Jamarian Morrow. You got some freshmen that are going to make some noise. So I think you feel really good there. And secondary wise, you know what? Julio Humphrey, he had to play a little bit more than I think we expected because Ricky Gibson wasn't ready to go. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to shake out with all those guys. They got, I don't want to say an embarrassment of riches because I think that's unfair to say, but I think they've got some battles secondary wise that maybe you're not the starter, but you're getting a lot. And I'm curious how much more Julio plays this year, because last year there was a lot of expectations for him because he came from Georgia as a 10 game starter and he had some injury situations he had to overcome. I'm excited to see about his contributions to the secondary.
Last question is the same for everybody who's done these interviews with me. When we get to the end of the season, Texas A&M, last game of the year. After that game, if I ran into you there in College Station, what are you going to tell me about Texas A&M season?
Okay, I'm going to tell you, let me think about this, all right? Because after the Texas game, I hope I tell you, this might be more hopeful optimism than I hope that I tell you they took another step in November. Okay, that's what I hope I tell you. Like they've got a Texas problem right now on the football field. Texas for 2 straight years has beaten A&M, and as you know, when your rival beats you twice, it's a problem. Now, what coach that does not
Trust me, I know.
over, yeah, but that does not overshadow what Coach Elko's done, right? I
Right.
mean, he took a team that nobody thought was going to be in the playoffs to the playoffs this year. I don't think a lot of people picked them. Maybe
No.
you did, Brian, in the preseason, but a lot of people were like, I don't know about Marcel. You guys went 8-5 last year. You guys got to go to Baton Rouge. So I think the two things I'm going to say is they did better on the road than people predicted, and they were better in November. Is that good enough to get in the playoffs? I don't know. When you have to go to Norman, you got to go to Baton Rouge, you got to go to Tuscaloosa, you host Texas, who's got all the talent in the world. I don't know what that means. I think Arizona State is the team you should beat early on, but I don't know. They've added some people. So I think, they're probably hovering between a 9-3 and in two. I don't know. I changed my mind. If the offensive line is good, I'm going to tell you that they're a 9-3, 10-2 team. If the offensive line's not what I hope it'll be a 9-3, 8-4 year. And I think we're going to have to all ask ourselves in the SEC, is 9 wins in the current 9-game SEC schedule what 10 wins used to be? Or, and is nine win, it's 8 wins what 9 used to be? Eight and
That's a good
four for
point.
A&M sounds disgusting to me. I've seen it so many times, I don't want to see it
Well, it's a
anymore. But with
meme.
nine, well, it is. But at the end of the day, when you have nobody has an easy path anymore in the SEC. Everyone said that A&M had an easy path last year. I'm sorry, I don't think going to Baton Rouge is ever easy, no matter what their record is. I've been there. There's a reason A&M hasn't won there forever, and they got to go back to back years. And I haven't even mentioned Missouri. Missouri's a top 25 team. A&M's got to go to Columbia for 2 straight years. So the A&M's got to go to South Carolina. A&M struggles in South Carolina. So I think I'll be telling you they look better at the end of the season. That's what I think I'll be telling you. As for their actual record, I don't know at this point.
For the first time since A&M joined the conference, they are not on the schedule for Mississippi State this year. So we won't be talking to David anytime soon, but we will always appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate you, Brian. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.